Okay, I'm here with my co-host, Trikar Penumaka.
And I'm here with my co-host, Maddie Eubank.
And we've been hosts for the past two Wednesdays here on the Radioactive Podcast. And in honor of the final podcast, we've been going through the texts on my phone. Oh, the digital history
of our conversation.
Of our time as co-hosts. Trikar, I'm declaring a state of emergency. I can't find any chillins.
What? Yeah, Vox Pop not recorded either.
Like anywhere. All mine are on vacation.
Dang.
And I've only got one short, not that good babysitter interview. What should we do? I'm scrambling on how to salvage this. But if none of the pieces are done, there's still time to change the theme.
Well, let's try the opposite. Old people, retirement.
I don't know why you made that suggestion. It's like so bad. And I said, wait, I could totally David Sedaris this if I could write a long creative piece, if we can't find a feature story. And I was like, superheroes, let's do superheroes. And you said,
wow, it's a good thing I was watching Honey Boo Boo, or else I would have never replied.
Ha ha. Today on the podcast, we'll be talking about moving in.
And moving on.
It's not just the stories, it's us. This is the last week of the Radioactive Summer Session 2013.
A program for teens to discover and enjoy radio. All of the podcasts for this week feature the final stories from all the Radioactive participants.
For moving in and moving on, you'll be hearing from Kendra Hanna and Ian Dongla.
Let's get started. Moving in, literally.
Home prices are the best they've been since the housing crisis of 2008. But many are still living with the remnants of that crisis.
One family in Edmonds has lived in their home for 7 years, the longest they've lived anywhere. Now they're being forced to leave. Radioactive's Kendra Hanna has the story.
In the Johnsons' living room, everything is packed up. It's empty except for a couple of shelves. They're trying to figure out how to take a glass cabinet down two flights of stairs. Natalie Johnson is a stay-at-home mom. Her husband is a pastor. They have four kids. They've lived in their home in Edmonds for the last 7 years.
Now here, this is the backyard. So we've got lights strung up and patio table, barbecue, all that good stuff.
Her neighborhood feels like a small town. She knows everyone and everyone knows her in a way she hasn't had before. Her neighbor's kid is in her house every single day.
Tree fort in the back, which we are sad to leave. We built that. All the neighborhood kids gathered to build that a few summers ago.
Natalie's family rents. One day, Natalie came home to find a piece of paper with an 800 number posted to her door. She Googled it, and it led her to the foreclosure department of a bank. The bank told Natalie that her house was going to be sold at auction. Natalie decided to fight for her home. Her family stopped paying rent. After 6 months of saving, they had enough to make a bid. Natalie thought they had a fighting chance, even though they were bidding against investment companies. The auction took place on the steps of the Everett Courthouse.
And it was interesting. There was a church across the street, and right as they started the auction, this church bells started playing Hallelujah. And I thought, maybe this is some great sign that we as the underdog are going to somehow beat out these hedge fund companies.
Within a minute, they were outbid. Her home was gone.
I just lost it, and it was awful. I'm sobbing, and there's all these businessmen standing around, and I'm like ugly crying, not like, shed a tear, like sobbing like you just like stole my house sobbing.
Natalie says the hardest realization was that she would have to move away from her friends.
The idea of moving away, you know, of course we'll see each other all the time, but there's something about being, I borrow so many eggs and so much butter from them. I can't even imagine how I'm going to be able to bake.
But Natalie needed to move on. She didn't want to live with the fear of, what if our landlord forecloses, and having to go through all of that again? Her family decided to buy a home. But by the time they started looking at houses, the market got incredibly competitive. So when Natalie went to make an offer, she made sure to make it as attractive as possible. She bid $22,000 over the asking price.
And I wrote a letter, even though everybody said, don't write a letter, it's a bank, they don't care. I wrote a letter and I wrote top 10 reasons why the Johnsons are the family to buy the house. And I made it really funny and offered to bake them cookies. And literally, we did everything.
Things were looking up. The kids loved the house. They were going to move. But then the call came, and they had been outbid.
That was awful because we had taken the kids over. We were new to this, so we thought, hey, let's look at houses and bring the kids. And so when we saw it, we loved it. The kids loved it. They had mentally moved in and picked their rooms, and I was already baking in the double ovens in my head, making cookies.
Again, Natalie felt beaten. It felt like the auction house all over. She started looking at houses again. This time she didn't take the kids. Time and time again, she was outbid. 6 more times. Natalie was panicking. Prices were going up, and she had a deadline to be out of the house. Finally, on the 8th house, her offer was accepted. But 2 months later, they still hadn't closed. They had to be out of the house in 3 days.
Today, we were waiting all day long to hear from the bank to see if we were going to close or if we were going to be homeless for a couple nights. And drum roll, please. They called us at 4 o'clock and the house closed. And we got the keys and we're able to come over here and actually take ownership of the house.
Now she has her house. It's a 3-bedroom house with a big downstairs in between Linwood and Everett.
They look beautiful.
She sits on our living room floor assembling a pair of brand new coral chairs. The first piece of new furniture she's ever bought.
I've created a masterpiece. I am putting together my beautiful new chairs for my beautiful new house. I'm so excited.
Homeownership security. Being a tenant her entire life, Natalie hasn't really had that before. She's lost that small town feeling, but she's thankful she doesn't have to go through being forced from her home again. She's looking forward to putting down roots here. For Radioactive, I'm Kendra Hanna.
And funny story, Shrikar was also moving around the time Kendra Hanna made that story for us. So Shrikar, you want to share a little bit about your moving experience?
My moving experience, well, we did search for a house for 3 months, but here's what it felt like. I came home one day, my mom and my dad decided to move. The next day we found a house. The next day they approved our offer, got the loan approved, and we're moving in. That's how fast it was.
Hi. How are you feeling about that, Shrikar?
I have lived in my current house for, say, 8 years.
Do you have an attachment to that house?
A little bit. Not really.
Not really?
The one thing, the one good thing about my house? My house floor plan is circular, so anytime I want to get some exercise and don't want to go outside, I can run in the house and it loops. I've got my own little track.
My house is like that, too.
Yeah. How many times must it be said? There's no plan. It had to happen. Got to move on sometime. And it's about time. By putting one foot in. Moving on to the second part of the podcast, where we put the spotlight on one family's road to forgiveness.
Darlene Sellin still remembers the day she found out. The knock, being told to sit down. Her niece Tiffany had been murdered. For a long time after that, she and her family wanted the man responsible to die.
Radioactive's Ian Dongla has a story of monumental change for a family and how a high school play had a lot to do with it.
Do you have a picture of her? I'd love to see a picture.
I certainly do.
A treasure chest of memories lies just to the left of the front door in the Sellin household. A box of smiles and laughter, eternally frozen in time. Each photo its own little diamond of joy. But some of these gems carry darker undertones.
Sweet. You can look at her face and see, you can see her intelligence, you can see her goodness, obviously as well as her beauty. It's a great loss to the family. I look at it 30 years later, I can't believe she's not here.
This is Darlene Selland. We're looking at a photo of a blonde 19-year-old with sparkling blue eyes, Tiffany Frizzell, Darlene's niece. Tiffany was murdered. brutally murdered. The night before her death, she'd set off for her freshman year of college. Classes were scheduled to start the next day.
You know, I couldn't believe it because we had just said goodbye to her. And the last thing she said to the family, you know, walking down that airport walkway, she turned around and waved and said, "I'll be home for Christmas." And she came home for Christmas, but she came home in a casket.
That was 1983. Flash forward almost 30 years to 2011, and Tiffany's murder is still on death row. No execution date set. And the family is in a limbo of sorts, waiting for closure. Until a simple play brings them face to face with their grief. The Sellens' youngest son, Trent, is auditioning for his high school show. It's Dead Man Walking, a play that argues against the death penalty with Matthew Poncelet, a death row inmate, as its lead character. Trent gets the lead.
Being Matthew Poncelet was the most I have ever been in touch with my emotion. It was the most that I had ever been connected so deep with my own sadness, so deep with my own remorse for something I hadn't even done, something that I was portraying. I was sorry for being Matthew Poncelet.
Trent had never felt sorry for a murderer before, even a fictional one. To him, this had always been clear. You kill, you should be killed. Now, he wasn't so sure. Maybe a killer could be sorry. Maybe a killer could change.
True remorse is really a powerful thing. You know, you can't help but feel bad. You can't help but watch this play and root for this murderer.
But Trent was born 10 years after Tiffany's death. He knew her story, but he'd never known her. His mom, Darlene, saw the casket. Darlene heard the coroner apologizing, saying he'd done everything he could. She has no idea how she's going to react as she takes her seat opening night, as the lights come up on her son and her grief.
Seeing Trent behind bars hit me really hard.
Dear Sister Helen, thank you for writing to me. I'm writing from my home, my 6x8-foot cell.
This is Trent in Dead Man Walking. Hours of the
day. You know, that took me back to, you know, pictures that I had seen and stuff, and that moment kind of got to me.
We are the elite because we're going to fry.
And the moment when his character was finally sorry and could finally weep, that was a monumental moment.
That boy, I killed him. And when the lights dimmed last night, I kneeled and I prayed for them kids. I've never done that before. I've never done that before.
It was so ironic that our own son humanized for a moment the man who had always been a monster to us. It was such an emotional experience that we came home and we wept. So, I mean, 30 years later, and we wept just like we wept, you know, when we found out that she had been murdered.
Trent's entire family, his aunts and uncles, see the show, and they're moved by his ability to turn a monster into a man, a human. One of the moments that stays with Darlene came at the end. Just after the lights go down, faces of executed felons flash across the screen, daring the audience to look back. And she does.
And for the first time in 30 years, I was able to look at those faces and see human beings instead of monsters. So this play, this simple high school play, challenged our entire family to forgiveness.
And that challenge is ongoing. Tiffany's killer is not Matthew Poncelet. There will be no climactic moment of forgiveness for this man who's shown no remorse for his crimes. But for the first time in 30 years, this family can look at a picture of someone on death row and see a man instead of a monster. For the first time in 30 years, this family has some closure. Just maybe not in the way they'd expected. For Radioactive, I'm Ian Dongla.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to our final podcast.
You might hear us again as youth producers here at Radioactive, but this is our last show as co-hosts.
Tune in tomorrow to hear my story about one man coming to terms with his mortality.
On the next Radioactive podcast, Kendra and Ian will present stories about battles against the odds.
Many thanks to our fellow Radioactivians,
Ian Dongla, Rachel Lam, Kendra Hanna,
Amina Ibrahim, Carlos Nieto, and Isaac Norin,
for all their courage and support
in the past 3 weeks of stressful deadlines and microwavable mac and cheese.
What are you talking about? I enjoyed this.
It was fun, but don't say it wasn't hard.
No, it was hard. It wasn't that hard.
It was hard.
I mean, you know, we only stayed up until like 3 editing podcasts.
Only had a few critical emergencies.
Critical emergencies. Hey, Honey Boo Boo saved our lives.
Only cried like twice. No, I was kidding. Many thanks to our slave masters. I mean, marvelous mentors, Jenny Asarno and Lila Katayev.
We couldn't do this without you.
Actually, though, they are awesome and nice and extremely patient. So thank you guys so much. To hear more, check out our website at kuow.org/radioactive.
And check out our Facebook page, Radioactive Youth Media, to tell us what you think.
Till next time.
We're moving on.
I can't wait to watch, like, videos of cats on YouTube for fun.
What do you mean?
Like, I haven't done that the whole time Radioactive.
Wow.
I've been working so hard. I haven't had time to watch viral videos about cats and dogs. Yes, Shrikar, do you see the invisible tears just pouring down my face right now?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
You know I'm crying on the inside. All right, what are you going to do, Shrikar, with all your free time after this?
Me? I have to finish a chemistry course.
Oh, I have language arts one.
And read a bunch of books.
No! Okay.
Radioactive is the end of my first gear. I'm going to get into sixth gear now, high gear. And go full steam ahead until school starts. It's going to be tough.
So long, farewell.
You're free to change your mind. Strength through diversity. Couldn't have put it more plainly. Got to move on sometime. Got to move on sometime. Got to move on.